Today's episode comes not from Silicon Valley, but from the African country of Angola. Population, 32 million. The capital, Luanda. Language, Portuguese. Top export, oil. It was the summer of 2014, and Erickson Vezzi was a long way from his home in Angola, 9,026 miles to be exact. He had traveled west to get his MBA at the Holt International Business School in San Francisco, and one thing in the U.S. had him, well, uber surprised. How easy it was to order food online. You see, at the time, the likes of Grubhub and Deliveroo, Eat24 and DoorDash, they weren't available in Angola. So Erickson, when getting his MBA, would eagerly and curiously scour food menus online, ordering lunch and dinner from his smartphone nearly every day. And when his deliveries came, Erickson would keep drivers at his door, even inviting them in for a bite to eat, asking in detail about their experiences, their hours, and their earnings, always leaving a generous tip.
I couldn't believe how low the commission were, man.
So naturally, when Erickson's MBA instructor prompted his class to come up with an original business plan, he thought almost immediately of bringing the first ever food delivery app to Angola. But when he pitched the idea to his class, his classmates laughed. Angola? Where's that? Now, 7 years later, it's Erickson who's had the last laugh. He's turned an idea for a school project into the widely known Tapuka, a nearly eight-figure business that executes over 1,000 deliveries per day in Luanda, the capital, and the surrounding area. But to go from MBA project to a multi-million dollar African tech business in a country known, well, first for diamonds and second for oil, it's one hell of a story. I'm David Zabinski.
I am Erickson Vezzi.
And this is not from Silicon Valley. Stories of trial and triumph from founders in emerging and frontier economies. Erickson, your MBA professor prompted you to come up with an original business idea. Why food delivery in Angola?
Because I was addicted to it, because it was the first time me ordering food online. And during that time, Uber Eats, Deliveroo, Grubhub, it was really popular. And I said to myself, like, why wouldn't this solution work for Angola? We have more than 10 million people over there. It's like, why shouldn't I bring this solution over there? So everything started from that point going forward.
Right. And in the US, it was the first time you had ever been exposed to a food delivery app. You must have been intrigued.
Yes. Yes. It was like, sometime it got to a point where I would just hold the delivery guy just to understand what's the process. How does he sign off? Like, how does the commission works? Seeing how he wrapped up his takeaway. Sometime I would put a wrong address just to see what's the customer support like process, and literally like taking notes of everything that was happening. And plus, with the pressure of like, okay, this is now a school project. If I want to graduate, I have to make sure this thing works. So everything was feeding off of the momentum.
Okay, so you pitched to your MBA class, which was in California, your idea of bringing a food delivery app to Angola. How was their reaction?
So there are some people that were like really motivating. It's like, okay, you have to go for it. A lot of people is like, man, this is Africa, man. Like, it's how many people have Android? How many people have iOS? Like, there's no numbers to this. So it was even more challenging whenever I would go enlist myself for pitching competition. And one of the cases was I went to try out for Shark Tank. So the idea is compelling, but once they heard of like, okay, you're doing the business for Africa, is like, no, we're not interested on that market. I started to even sign up on pitching competition that was for only focused for women. And I'll go there, they let me in, I'll pitch. I'll get a bunch of investors just telling me how the idea is flawed, that how it's not gonna work. It came to a time me and my co-founder decided, is like, okay, we're not gonna get money from America, but we're going to get feedback.
But didn't you decide to go out and try and raise some money using, was it Indiegogo anyways?
Yes. A lot of people tend to donate whenever it comes to Africa, and it's about feeding people. So we created a campaign where it was like, share a meal, share a moment. You put like a hungry child over there. It's like, okay, we're building a food delivery company where every time you order, a percentage of that amount goes to feed somebody, just to get off on the soft side of investors. It didn't work. Our goal was to raise $20,000. We only got $1,500.
So none of this sounds like the typical MBA experience I hear of, right? Typically, MBA students will go out and co-found or co-raise for businesses together with their classmates. But that wasn't the case for you, was it?
No. A lot of them, they live in America. So they feel safe. That wasn't our case. In my cohort, we had 30 nationalities, and I was the only Angolan.
Well, in any event, you had this $1,500 you had raised on Indiegogo. What'd you do with it? Did you start investing in the coding?
So I went on Google and actually typed how to find a developer. So Upwork popped up. So I got the project description. So I wrote it. I want the food delivery app that looks just like E24. And a bunch of developers came up. So I found the cheapest one. The guy, after 2 weeks, he showed me the prototype without knowing that you need a backend, you need a dispatching platform. Like, I was so excited. I was showing everybody, like, look at this idea. It's actually working. So I came to a time because Upwork works on the time base. So the developer was always clocking his work without knowing, like, actually what's the end process of the whole developing cycle. So I started running out of money.
What'd you do?
So I started selling, like, I sold my watch, I guess a couple of $1,000s. I put some in a project. So I sold my 2014 Jeep Grand Cherokee. I bought it for $40,000. And you know, in America, once the car leaves the lot, like, it loses half of the value. I didn't care, man. Like, I was building something for the first time in the whole country. So all the logic wasn't there. Soon to realize that I already was spending more than $10,000 of that money with the developers that is just developing something that I don't even understand, like a single line of coding.
Okay, you sold your watch, you sold your car, just to finance the development of a bunch of code you didn't understand, living 9,000 miles away from friends and family. What kept you going?
One thing that I keep on saying, man, like, you're working on something that has never been done in the whole country. It's like, I would tell my dad, is like, hey, your son is not going to be the president. We're not going to build hospitals. Like, we don't have that cash. But through technology, we can actually make an impact. And this thing can employ all the young guys that are riding motorcycle in the formal market. We can bring visibility to stores that need to increase their sales. And we can bring convenience. So I actually believed on that every single day while we sat on a table. I was telling him, I was like, hey, today we achieved this milestone. Even if I would inflate the numbers, like, just to get him excited about it.
Okay, so at some point a few months later, you graduate and you head back home to Angola with some coding that would allegedly be the backbone for a food delivery app. What happened next?
2 months later, after we came back, I went to a birthday party and I saw this tall guy. And he was tall and bald. Like, this guy is, like, you don't find a lot of tall, bald white guys in Angola. And I'm like, this guy must speak English. Let me go talk to him. So I went over there and, like, hey, my name is Erickson. Hey, I'm working on this project, man. Like, and he was like, hey, I'm on IT as well. Like, let me see it. I showed him, like, the prototype. And he's like, okay, I'm a consultant as well. Like, send me your info. So we traded numbers. And as an entrepreneur, you're always giving your business card, but not often people call you back. And that guy, the next day, called back. I'm like, okay, this guy is different. We kept on talking, like, back and forth. And I'm like, okay, this guy is really good. So the guy named Eugene approached me. He's like, okay, I want to be a consultant, but this is my fees. I'm like, dude, I don't have money, man. He's like, let's agree on something. I'm telling you, this thing is going to work. I'll start paying you $50 per month and adding $50 every single month, meaning first month, 50, second month, 100, and so on. If within 6 months you see that this thing is actually working, I'll give you shares. and forget about being my consultant. You can actually be my co-founder.
Okay, so Eugene took some co-founder equity and sweat a little bit with you. Since he had a technical background, what do you think of your code?
He actually looked for a couple of companies from South Africa, developing company, to actually see if the codes were correct. And to our surprise, everything was flawed.
And how much had you spent on that original code? Was it $10,000?
It was more than that. It was like close to $20,000 worth of coding and like payment that went all the way. At that point, it's like, man, it's the only thing that we had actually physical that to show people it wasn't working.
All right. So all the cash you had had from a small fundraise, from selling your watch, selling your car, it all ended up going towards code you wouldn't even use. Did you end up hiring the South African coders and try again?
So after the company in South Africa assessing our code, it was like, okay, we can save part of that, but it will take us 9 months to redo everything. So this is already January 2016. From that point, we started to reverse engineer the whole process because we knew like, okay, we have 9 months process to figure out everything from how to sign up merchants, how to train the driver, where to have an office, because at that time we're meeting at the shopping centers. We would lie to people that our office is about to be built because we didn't want to seem like unprofessional. So anywhere that had free Wi-Fi, we were there like meeting and just pretending that we had something really structured. And like you said, everything was fake it until you make it. And that's literally what we were doing at the time.
As the new code was being developed in South Africa, at least with Ericsson in Angola this time around, he was able to raise a bit of money from friends and family who understood the Angolan ecosystem better than his US classmates had. But as the Tapuka app was being built, Ericsson had one other problem to solve. Who would be his drivers?
We hired 16 drivers 4 months before we launched. Like, we're not making any money because we're just trying to figure out how we're going to coach the drivers, how we're going to write off the script of them talking to customers. So one of the things that we started doing, we started like for drivers to learn how to navigate with the GPS because none of the drivers ever had a smartphone before. So we started purchasing smartphones for drivers. We started teaching them how to use smartphones and how to navigate. One of the exercises that we were doing is like hiding locations within the city. And then we will give them tasks for them to find it, like scavenger hunt. So that way, that will be the replica of like finding customers once you receive the order.
Okay, so the app was being developed. You had drivers in training. How about customers?
We had initiated a couple of campaigns for pre-sign up for customers just to build awareness. And we started giving it like ice cream to customers just to say like, okay, we're coming soon. Like it was the longest coming soon campaign. We started a coming soon campaign from January to September, just giving the ice cream and just pretending on stuff that we're doing.
All right. So you had the ball rolling. You had an app that'd be ready almost imminently. You had drivers. Now you had some customers. How about perhaps the most important part? Restaurants.
Out of the 400 list of the restaurants that we found from TripAdvisor, because there was nothing available, only two of them accepted to work with us.
Two? Two restaurants for how many customers?
We had already a customer base of from the pre-launching campaign of 3,000 users, but only with two restaurants. People were asking us, like, this is it? Like, we waited like 9 months for only two restaurants?
Why do you think restaurants were so reluctant to join?
You go to a restaurant and you tell them, like, I'm building this platform. It'll give you extra revenue by lowering your cost. And people still didn't believe it because it was unusual for a local guy to come up with a solution like this.
But nonetheless, with two restaurants and the app ready, you still decided to launch Tapuka.
Like, I remember the first day we had only one order and we had 16 drivers. And the drivers will take turns who's going to deliver today or tomorrow, because we never had like for almost 2 weeks, we never had more than 16 orders. And it was really deflating sometimes. And some of the orders we would place it pretending that we're a customer just to give the drivers rotation so they can believe as well in the process.
So hold on. How'd you keep your drivers incentivized? Wasn't their pay mostly derived from the number of deliveries they were doing, which seemed to be barely any?
We're competing with the informal market. And in an informal market, drivers are getting paid immediately. So we gave the drivers like a fixed pay and mixed with the commission in order for the drivers to remain loyal throughout the time until we had like more traction. We're doing about 20 orders per day. It's like, we're going to die like this. Like, we don't have any more cars to sell. It's like, we have to do something.
So what'd you do?
The idea was for us to sign up high-end restaurant because the commission will be good while we still maintain the optimal time for deliveries. So out of this one of these visits, I called this Indian restaurant and the owner picked up. I went over there. I talked to him. It was like, okay, it's an interesting project. The guy told me, he's like, I'm traveling in 2 days. If you set up everything, we start on Monday. Okay, I did everything. I took my iPhone and was taking pictures of the meals and stuff like that. Uploaded on the platform, and there it was. People were ordering.
Did he ever get back to you?
1 week later, after he got back from his traveling, he actually called me. He was like, okay, I want to meet you. I want to hear more about your business. So I went over there with my pitch deck. I was pitching to him while he was watching Barca, Real Madrid play. While I'm pitching, like, he seems like he wasn't even paying attention to it. I'm like, I'm talking, but my heart is like, man, I'm losing this guy, man. It's another investor that we lost. The following day, the guy calls me. He's like, hey, I like what you said. I want to introduce you to my other friend who's from Nigeria. He's interested in your business as well. I'm like, okay, something has changed. I went over there. We had dinner at this restaurant. I pitched. The guy liked the idea. He's like, I want to meet your team. So I called my team. We sat over there. We had a lunch. And it's like, okay, we want to invest. We want to see what's the valuation. We told them, it's like, okay, give us a couple of days for us to do the valuation. It was the first time somebody asking us about the valuation. So we went back online, started crunching different valuation methods. And we came up with, okay, it's roughly $2 million. Let's just pitch this thing and see if these guys bite.
$2 million? How'd you come up with that?
There is a valuation for startups that don't have traction. Based upon the experience from the team and the how solid the idea is, and if you have competitors, and it usually gives up to $2 million because it's based upon the strength of the team. So that was our main valuation method that we used.
And what were your numbers at that point?
Our numbers at that point, we're doing close to 50 orders per day during that time. And we're still having like a negative burnout. So, from the money that we sold cars, that's what was actually keeping us. We went for 1 year and a half without salaries.
So you must have been pretty desperate for a cash injection. I imagine you took their investment.
The guys came up like, hey, we're interested in buying 15%, but we're going to give you guys $150,000 for you guys to push. We're like, perfect. From that point on, like, it was the first time actually having cash injected in the business that didn't came from us. And I remember the first 3 months, we burned close to $50,000 worth of that cash just spending it on marketing because we didn't know nothing better.
And how'd that $50,000 worth of marketing help the business?
So we went from 2016 total sales of $16,000. To 2017 of $800,000.
And after raising over $100,000 at a $1 million valuation, Topuka 50x'd their sales numbers from 2016 to 2017. And as they began to make a name for themselves in both Angola and in Africa, they won the Seed Stars competition for Angola in 2017, putting them in an accelerator that proved to be, well, invaluable.
It was the first time talking to people that actually understood what it's like to grow a marketplace. We went from actually understanding the A, B, and C from doing more experiments, controlled experiment, as opposed to just doing marketing campaign without tracking what's actually is being done. We went for from actually how to build the team, how to hire, how to fundraise, different valuation methods, and really understanding what's the language that the investors are looking for and what are the KPIs. So for us, it was like the beginning of everything. So SidStar meant a lot to us. And in 2018, we closed a deal for 2% for $100,000 to one of the local investors, because the numbers were speaking for itself. Because we went from $800,000 to $3.6 million from a span in a year. So everybody know about Tupuka.
So from $800,000 in 2017 to $3.6 million in 2018. Man, how'd you grow so fast?
The customers were asking us, okay, you guys are doing well on food deliveries. Why don't you guys add other type of verticals, such as groceries, pharmacies, and clothing and electronics? So at that point, we decided to rebrand the whole company. We changed the color of the company. We changed the logo. We went from a universe of food to actually unlimited deliveries, because the customers wanted more, because we could have delivered, we could deliver anything within 45 minutes. And one interesting thing that happened to us, most at the time, most of grocery delivery platforms were doing it next day. And for us, we started the same day, 3 hours deliveries for groceries, because we had understood exactly how the logistics moves and how we can utilize our driver base in order to fulfill a grocery delivery within 3 hours.
All right, so in 2018, you guys were on fire. Millions in sales, massive growth, horizontal expansion, SidStar winners. How'd things go in 2019?
In 2019 is, 2019 we became confident. It's like, okay, we understand everything that is going on the market. We decided, okay, let's experiment on the different field. So we identified the opportunity on the logistics and mobility. So we said, like, okay, we understand how to deliver food from one place to another. We can apply the same logic to moving people. So we invested on, we bought a solution for taxis. And we start onboarding drivers and people that have their own car. During that time, we already had like a customer base of over 100,000 users. But keep in mind, the platform that we were working with, it was built only for food deliveries. So we're adding everything on top of that without even knowing that, okay, that the platform is not like scalable enough.
So what happened next?
In the middle of 2019, our main platform crashed. So imagine like during the peak hours of your services and you go blank, nobody can see anything. You go blind at the peak hours, like 7 p.m., the drivers cannot see orders. You have about 500 orders at restaurants that the restaurant cannot even see. They cannot allocate. So, and one of the things that we have on our contract, everything that has been ordered is considered sold before even it's delivered. So, and some of the restaurants are taking advantage of that. It's like, okay, I don't care about them. It's like, as soon as this phone rings, it's like, it's made money.
Okay, the Tupuka app crashes. Merchants are taking advantage. You're likely disenchanting customers. What you do?
We had to make a quick decision between 2 months to change the whole platform. So we went from having 100,000 customers and forcing everybody to install again to a new platform. And we went from having about 1,000 orders a day to 200 orders a day. And with the fixed cost that wasn't elastic to adjust for that. Drivers are taking advantage because you cannot control the cash because your system has crashed. You don't know how much money you're supposed to be collecting. So it's like a total fail. And we went from having about 250 merchants to having 20 merchants available on the app. Customers are asking us, okay, where has all the merchants went? And you don't know how to answer. And then you're forcing customers to re-sign up like to a whole new different platform with their whole entire history like almost disappeared. We have it backed up, but it didn't translate to the new platform.
Erickson, of all your moments of trial, the
the failed crowdsource, the broken code, doing 1 to 2 deliveries per day at the start. This one seemed like the hardest fall from grace.
I could say that, like, for us, it was like almost the end of Tupuka.
And so as 2019 ended in, well, turmoil for Erickson and Tupuka, they were looking for a miracle of sorts as 2020 came around. And in March of that year, as Luanda went into COVID-related lockdown, every sector in the entire city shut down, with one exception, delivery.
So in March, once they announced that, like, all the restaurants were closing, like, and the only option that they had to work was through a delivery platform.
So the entire city of Luanda shuts down, and the economy becomes reliant on delivery. And it just so happens you own the biggest delivery app and platform in the country.
Exactly. So it's like, it's a perfect miracle.
I take it your merchants and customers came roaring back.
Yes. So they came back, like, we had supermarkets that were like rivals. And at the normal condition, they will never operate within the same platform. Whenever COVID hit, like, people forgot about that. Some merchants had like a limit. They couldn't deliver more than 7 kilometer radius. They were like, okay, increase it to the whole city because we just want to keep on selling because people are actually ordering like crazy. So from that point, like, we went back from 20 merchants to 500 merchants in a space of like 2 months, where it demanded a lot from our sales team because it's like it was onboarding constant time. Like every single day we had to have like new merchants.
Your 2020 sales figures, they must have been massive.
Yes. So last year's sales was $6.5 million. Compared to 4.9, which was from 2019.
$6.5 million in sales. Man, did you ever think when, I don't know, ordering lunch in San Francisco in 2014 that 6 years later you'd be responsible for $6.5 million worth of food deliveries in your home country?
No. I'll tell you, no. I still think about it even today. It's a lot of it, what's happening today, it's more about the opportunity that are in hand and how we're capitalizing it. I'll answer you fairly no, because it was only an idea that every single day more people kept on believing on it. And then we kept on giving our all.
And now, Erickson, we're in 2021 and you've clearly made a name for Tupuka. But how about social impact? Aside from delivering customers their lunch on time or getting people their groceries in a few hours, has Tupuka had a more meaningful effect on Angolans' lives?
An interesting story was a lady that was selling masks. And masks were running out of pharmacies and supermarkets. And she had like a stock of masks that she was selling worth of $10,000 of masks per month throughout our platform. And a lot of other business came up. Like, we had sushi places that were being that were popping up before it was just a niche service. And we had ladies that would sell like street food from our platform. They would sell like close to $100 per week on just selling street food. So we managed to empower the whole market, connect people, depending from a high end to a low end type of merchant.
How about your drivers? You're contracting hundreds of Angolans throughout the capital. How much are they earning?
To understand this thing, it's important first to understand how the informal market works. The drivers only have like one option. Either they're doing moto taxi on informal or they join a delivery platform. People that are working on informal markets, they're making close to $70 to $80 a month. By joining Tupuka, which you get 80% of the delivery fee, our drivers on average are making $200, and the good ones are making $400.
Right. So you've shown the contracting out, the Uber business model. It works in Angola for both sides. Why do you think the likes of Uber and Deliveroo and all the other guys have always ignored Angola?
First of all, I think it's the language barrier. We speak Portuguese. A lot of investors tend to invest on areas that they speak similar language. that the investment or investors are protected by the government laws. And these were some of our barriers before.
Okay, and the rest of Southern Africa? Angola's surrounded by interesting markets. You've got the DRC, Zambia, Namibia. Why have the big players also ignored them?
So first of all, I think it's the population size, apart from Kinshasa. Once you have the small amount of a population and then you start looking at internet penetration and other KPIs that are important for this type of business, investors tend to go to places that they feel safe. And then those countries, I would say Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, have done a good job at marketing themselves. So Angola, Congo, Zambia, we have done a poor job on this thing. But on the positive side, this has allowed us to incubate some of our solutions. So as we are hearing what they're doing in other markets, we're listening, we're implementing, we're improving our solutions, which whenever they realize that we exist, we're far ahead and well-developed.
Okay, you make the good point. Investors tend to go where they feel safe. And whilst many may not feel safe in, say, Kinshasa, DRC, that wouldn't be the case for you, Erickson, would it?
No. I have backgrounds. My mom is from DRC. So I have close ties over there. And I like to work on areas that haven't been done anything like we did in Luanda. So I understand what's it like to launch something and to only have one deliveries or one order. And I understand how to build a team with people that haven't even seen or touched our application.
Right. There are clearly differences in running businesses in developed versus emerging markets. So with that in mind, what are some considerations you have whilst running Tapuka in Luanda that, say, someone running DoorDash in New York or, I don't know, Deliveroo in London wouldn't have to think about?
It's just the whole system. First, it starts from a payment system. In the States, most of the food delivery apps, people pay using Visa, MasterCard. So meaning the food before it leaves, it's already paid. Here, we're carrying the risk until the customer confirms that it's paid. And imagine if this platform crashes, like you're losing money immediately. Another thing is just the digital divide and the financial literacy that we have here. Is like our driver, you have to explain him what's a smartphone, how to navigate Google Maps. And all these barriers tend to add on an amount of the number of staff that you need just to control the operation.
But nonetheless, you've shown the market that a food delivery app can work in Angola and Southern Africa. I'm sure this has invited some competitors.
Yes, we have competitors. One of the things that we were aware is like once you validate a market, a lot of people will come in because of people are afraid to take the first risk. And we took the first risk and we made the first mistakes and people are learning from our mistakes. So we no longer want to be just a delivery platform. We want to be a platform that enables other deliveries. So you can have your marketplace, but you can use our 300 drivers to deliver for your marketplace. So it's really understanding, okay, what's the pain point that the market has and how can we position ourselves in a way that we can sustain the growth of the market.
And as the competition continues to enter the market, how do you expect your 2021 figures to be?
It's a lot better. I would say we already reached half of what we have done last year. And it's only been like 4 months. With the new models that we're bringing in, the way that we're diversifying the revenues, we're going to double our numbers this year because of we're opening up our platform to anybody to use. So you can be a competitor and you can use our platform. You can be in a different province and without even us having a delivery guys, you can use our platform. We're doing sales advertising on a platform.
Are you looking to take the business outside of Angola?
Yes, we already have interest across from different areas. We have interest from, surprisingly, from Belgium, Lisbon, Kinshasa, Cape Town, because people are seeing different opportunities where the big guys are not looking at because their commissions are high. And the way that we operate at the low cost It's really interesting because we always protect the interest of the drivers, because without drivers, you cannot have the whole solution. So this is our approach to the market, and it's showing its value as we're getting different requests since we announced like 2 weeks ago.
Your commissions are lower than your global competitors. Why is that?
Yes, they charge more. For example, Uber tends to charge 30%, and 30% wouldn't work on this market. So we decided like to go for lower margins for just to ease off like the barriers of entry, because we had to convince partners that for the first time people can actually order from online. So, and then we believe like with this profit margin, and then for the cost of labor that we have here in Angola, it's quite competitive that we don't need to cannibalize pretty much the merchant that is actually working hard to make money, and you charging 30% is like, doesn't make sense. And you have a trend around the world that you see a lot of restaurants already complaining and finding more hyper local solutions that tend to charge less commission, because 30%, 35% is really steep just for marketing purposes. So for our case, is 21%, which is divided between 15% is actually our commission, and then the remaining goes from like the delivery fee amount, where the driver keeps 80%, because we wanted to build a solution where everybody actually won.
And it seems like you've done that, Erickson. It seems like the entire ecosystem, restaurants, drivers, customers, the entire city of Luanda has won. But how about you? I'm sure you've seen the astronomical exits that a lot of your competitions had. For example, in Dubai, where I live, our local ride-sharing app is Careem, and they sold to Uber in 2019 for over $3 billion. Do you have a similar strategy in mind?
Yes. For a scenario, it's either you join them or you can compete with them. So to compete, you need to a lot of funds. But our strategy has been is like, let's focus on areas they don't look at. And let's make sure that we prepare the terrain. And so if any one of these giants feels like, okay, that market is interested, they find an organized company with a solid customer base and with a process that are already well organized. So our exit strategy is either through acquisition or even enlisting to a local public companies here in Angola, which we already, like the government is already creating conditions for this thing.
I'm sure regardless, you serve and will continue to serve as an inspiration to Angolan entrepreneurs. Erickson, what's your message to them?
You got to believe, man. It's not a two-year process. We've been at it for 6 years. And some of the stuff that we talked about, like 4 years, it's only starting to happen today. So for us, as we go forward, it becomes a lot easier because of the cost of technology has decreased so much since we started. So if you're building a similar solution, don't feel afraid to come and talk to us. I feel like we can shorten your learning curve by actually sharing our experience and growing together. So that's our message to the market. But it's not a overnight success. Like it takes time.
All right, Erickson, when we chat a year from now in 2022, where's Tupuka going to be?
In 20 cities, man. That's our goal.
That was Erickson Vezi from Tupuka on Not From Silicon Valley. Stay tuned as we interview founders from all around the world, from Nigeria to Mongolia, Egypt to Colombia, Kazakhstan to the Philippines, and everywhere in between. We'll see you next time.